The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Welcome to the program. Thank you for listening. This is Mike Consul, and my guest is Amy Lynch, whose regulatory experience includes stints as an examiner and an investigator for the SEC and FINRA before founding Frontline Compliance, from where she now assists private sector companies with their regulatory and compliance issues. She is here to discuss the new SEC rule regarding advertising by product and fund sponsors, broker-dealers, and so on. Amy, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
You bet. This is very timely. Help me out here. What exactly has changed with regard to the ability of those investment management organizations to advertise? Because it sounds a little unclear. There's talk about, you know, you can have endorsements and within ads. I mean, what exactly has changed, and when does it take effect?
So the SEC did pass its new rule on investment advisor advertising and marketing the end of last year in December. The rule had been proposed in, I believe, November of 2019, and then it was pushed out the door as Chairman Clayton was leaving the SEC in December. And what it did was it replaced the current existing advertising rule for advisors. And it also rescinded the cash solicitation rule for advisors and essentially included the rules for cash or non-cash solicitation as part of the advertising rule. So now we have what I would call a two-for-one special with the advertising rule. And it is changing the way advisors can market and advertise their products and services. And it was an attempt to essentially bring the advertising rule up to speed into the 21st century, because that rule had been written back in the 1960s. And since then, it had been updated via various SEC no action letters that were the guidance for the industry. And firms had a great deal of difficulty in navigating the advertising rule unless they knew about all of those no action letters. And there were dozens of them, and they weren't all publicly available or readily accessible. So it was a hard rule to really comply with, and many firms would run afoul of it, especially as the industry changed and became more modern with how they advertise using digital media, for example. And the rule really was not written for that type of advertisement and marketing. So it was well overdue and time for the rule to get a makeover, and it did. So that was the point of the rule and why it came out. There is going to be a lot of discussion still about this rule and how to exactly comply with it.
Now, you mentioned solicitation. I mean, are these organizations literally going to be able to request funds or actually invite investors to invest their dollars with their particular product?
Well, it depends on how they're marketing and what they're marketing. Are you speaking to private funds in that question?
Well, if I'm raising a private equity fund, for example, can I run an ad that says, hey, listen, minimum investment's only $15,000, and this is what we're going to do with the money, and it's a great opportunity?
So the short answer to that question is no. Because this new rule does not replace the requirements under Reg D, which govern private fund solicitation. So that rule still applies. Rule 506 B and C still apply regarding how private fund firms are allowed to advertise their funds. So general solicitation in that context that you just mentioned would still not be allowed.
Okay, so where's the freedom in this new rule? What can I do now that I couldn't do before?
So now, for example, you can use testimonials and endorsements, and those can take place via social media, whereas before you could not. So previously, the SEC had taken the position that if you went and liked something on Facebook or gave something a thumbs up or liked something on Twitter or retweeted something, those things could be deemed to be testimonials or endorsements and prohibited under the original advertising rule. Now with this update, they're saying, okay, you can do that, subject to certain restrictions and disclosure requirements, especially if those testimonials or endorsements were compensated in any way, whether via cash or non-cash compensation.
Those aren't really true endorsements, though. So as an example, let's get back to the private equity fund. I have a private equity fund. I have somebody who wants to say, hey, I'm on my third private equity fund with this company. And I've had nothing but some terrific results from that. That is prohibited, correct?
For a private fund, it's a very gray area because we're dealing with dueling pieces of legislation, because Reg D issues are still going to be there for private funds. Mm-hmm. And the new rule is written mainly for retail entities and institutional entities other than private funds. There are specific areas that are targeted to the private fund world. And by that, I will say the carve-outs for one-on-one presentations and the use of hypothetical performance. The new rule does address the private fund world there. It also does address the private fund world when it comes to disqualification provisions. And again, it's going back to Reg D and essentially stating that Reg D does still apply for these funds and firms need to be looking at it.
So there's still a lot of opacity here. I mean, this is the same problem that the industry's complained about for a long time, right? I mean, that the rules aren't very clear, we could be stepping on a landmine without knowing we're stepping on a landmine, and the SEC is not making these rules just cut and dried.
That's right. It is not cut and dry. There is gray area. And I would say one way that the private fund industry has gotten around a lot of the issues that you just mentioned is if the testimonial or the endorsement example that you just gave, if it's really going towards the advisory entity and not specific to the fund, they probably could do that because then they are endorsing the advisor or the GP. They're not endorsing the fund itself, and it's the fund that is covered under Reg D.
Is there any kind of a vetting process that the SEC has in place where an organization can actually produce an ad or ad campaign and say, look, we want you to review it and give us the green light so that we know that we're not going to be punished on the back end and get fined for some reason? Or is that not part of the SEC's function? They don't have the personnel to do that and so on.
Right. The SEC does not require filings of advertising materials. FINRA does that for its member firms. There are certain requirements to have materials filed and approved by FINRA as an SRO before they can distribute and produce those materials. Right now, firms are going to have to look at their own materials and make their own decisions. Hopefully, they have a qualified compliance consultant helping them.
So is this going to make a material difference, this new rule? I mean, you as an advisor to the private sector, would you say, hey, there is, you know, legitimately, I mean, other than getting a click or a retweet, which doesn't seem like a heck of a lot, is there a real material difference here that is going to benefit the private wealth space?
You know what they say, the devil is in the details. I think that is the case with this rule. So there, I mentioned all of those many SEC no action letters. A key component of the rule and how it will play out is which one of those SEC no action letters will still remain. The SEC said in the rule release that they would be withdrawing many of those no action letters because they've addressed the issue in the rule. So when they put out that list, the industry will have a much better idea of how to comply with the rule, because they'll know, okay, this letter applies, that one does not, and they have to then go back to the new rule to see how to proceed.
So what exactly is a no action rule? No action letter.
So a no action letter from the commission is a letter that provides guidance to the industry. Usually it's a letter written by one firm writing into the SEC saying, we request that you will not provide an enforcement action against us if we were to conduct this activity in such a way under a certain rule. Basically, they're asking the commission to not deem them to be in violation of the rule. And when the SEC grants that, they usually will grant that with provisions or with criteria that the firm has to meet in order to not have an enforcement action against them. And they will list that criteria. And that criteria in that letter can be relied upon by the industry as a whole, as long as the facts and circumstances of the action are applicable to the letter. And that's where firms run afoul as well, because they think they can rely upon a letter, but what they're doing is not exactly how it's been proposed in that no action letter. Therefore, they can't rely upon it.
So it almost sounds like what I had said earlier is the case, that you can go to the SEC and be vetted. You can say, hey, we're going to do this. We want to hear you tell us that we're not running afoul of your rules and give us the green light.
You can, but it's a very long, arduous process. So typically those letters are written by legal counsel. It's sent to the Division of Investment Management. It has to be reviewed and approved. It could take months, maybe even longer, maybe even a year or longer if it's truly complicated. So most of the time, firms do not do that unless they really are trying to make a statement on behalf of the industry.
What was the force behind this rule change? I mean, was the industry lobbying for this rule? I guess it's a new rule. I'm not sure if you call it a rule change or a new rule. You can clarify that for us. But what was the force behind it? Was it the industry lobbying and saying we need this updated or the reins loosened a little bit?
Yes. So the various industry lobbying organizations like the Investment Advisor Association, the Managed Funds Association, have been trying to get the SEC to make changes and updates to this rule for many years. So it was long overdue. And as I said in the beginning, it really was because of the changes in how firms market, the use of digital media, the use of social media, online platforms, et cetera. So the industry really needed some guidance on what would be allowed or not allowed in those circumstances. And unfortunately, I don't believe this current rule did a lot to address those specific scenarios. So I would suspect that between now and the actual compliance date for the rule, which is 18 months from the date that it's listed in the Federal Register or becomes effective, then there will be additional guidance put out by the SEC to specifically address certain concerns, and it will be needed.
Now, this was not a unanimous decision, is my understanding. Not the entire commission voted in favor of it. Is that the case?
Absolutely. So when this was voted upon, we had two Republican commissioners plus the Chairman Clayton, who I believe was an independent but tended to vote Republican. And then we had the two Democrats. So this was a party line vote for the most part. The two Republicans and Clayton obviously voting for it, and then the two Democratic commissioners not.
So the dissenters' argument is what? That, you know, it lessens the protections for would-be investors out there?
Well, it does loosen the requirements. It is a deregulatory approach to the rule. In this, a very broad sense, So it allows more leniency as far as how a firm can market and advertise its products and services. But it also was a valid attempt to add some clarity and bake in some of those positions that have been provided over, you know, the past 50 plus years regarding what the rule is actually saying. So issues regarding predecessor performance, hypothetical performance, third-party rankings and ratings. These were all areas that had been basically discussed via SEC no action letters. And if you wanted to use a third-party rating in a material, or you wanted to show your entity's predecessor performance, you had to go back to one of those letters in order to find out how you do it in a compliant way. They did attempt to bake in some of that guidance now into this new rule. I think the problem that perhaps those in the Division of Investment Management, as well as the industry, still have with this rule is it still does not have the clarity that was needed. So it's trying to be very principle-based, which is the approach that the SEC had been taking over the past 4 years. So we'll see what happens going forward under a new administration, the type of guidance that comes out from this.
Well, I was going to ask you, with a Democratic administration taking over, is this rule going to stick, or is there a high probability it will be rescinded?
That is a great question. I think it will stick, but I believe it needs guidance. So like I said, they've got a full 18 months. This rule will probably not have a compliance effective date until June of 2022. So they have time to put out more guidance. And they have been doing that actually via these investment management alerts and guidance letters that they have been putting out over the past few years. Perhaps they'll continue that and provide the guidance to the industry in that way.
So who is most affected by this new rule? Can you actually identify either the parties that are affected by it, or who is going to benefit most from it?
So the parties that are affected are those SEC registered investment advisors, whether they be retail or non-retail or institutional, and of course the private fund advisors as well. There are, like we said before, there are certain conflicts still between what Reg D is requiring for the funds and then what this new rule is then going to allow or require of the advisors to those private funds. There needs to be some guidance put out by the SEC to clear that up.
What else can you tell us about this rule that, Amy, that people should be thinking about? Or maybe there's some kind of aspect of this that hasn't been made completely clear in the reporting on it, or that I haven't touched on.
Well, the issue with those no action letters needs to be clarified. That's what I'm hearing. And I think that the industry is waiting with, you know, bated breath, so to speak, to find out which one of those letters is going to still remain, if any. And I will just give you an example. In the private equity world, those firms tend to like to point to case studies in their marketing decks for their funds and talk about certain positions or company portfolio companies that they have held and the results of those on their returns. So you can do that if you follow certain no action letters that are out there regarding what they call past specific recommendations. And that's how firms have been complying with that. Although since private funds were not completely addressed under the advertising rule before, the SEC had not taken a position on it. So now we have this new rule, and we will see how the SEC decides to take a position on it now. And it looks like they are going to put those case studies under the advertising guidelines for past specific recommendations or even current recommendations. So it looks like that will be covered under the new rule, and they can do it as long as they have certain disclosures in place.
So you were a regulator for many years, and you decided to leave regulatory agencies, and I guess most recently, I think it was the SEC you were with, and you went out and started, went into the private sector and started a compliance firm. What prompted the decision? Why did you decide to leave the regulatory environment there? I mean, you're still within it, but you're now advising private organizations, private sector organizations. Why do you leave the SEC?
So actually, I was at the SEC first in my career. Okay. Then I left the SEC and went into private sector, and I was chief compliance officer for several different firms before then going back and becoming a regulator again. And that time it was with FINRA. So I actually have been at on the buy side as a regulator, as well as the sell side as a regulator, and then also in private sector. So I was exposed to so many parts of the industry that I felt like it was time for me to then share that knowledge with the industry as a whole. So I took my knowledge and started Frontline Compliance so that I can really show our clients the perspective that the regulators have and why the regulators think about a particular issue the way they do. Because that's half the battle, is really understanding what will the SEC expect and how do they perceive a certain activity that a firm is trying to move forward with.
So if let's say this rule sticks, and what is on the wish list for the industry? What other changes would the industry like to see? What's that wish list look like? Can you kind of articulate those for us?
So the issue, for example, with the testimonials, the new rule will require disclosures to be in close proximity, is the term that they use, close proximity to the testimonial. So if you're providing a testimonial via a tweet, you're limited in your space. So how do you then provide your disclosure and your disclaimers regarding that testimonial? And I would think that the answer would be via a hyperlink of some sort, linking you back to a disclosure page. And that will need to be addressed. It was not very plain or clear in the current rule release. So that type of a testimonial would need to be clarified as to how do you determine what is close proximity and how do you comply with that.
So if you were brought into the SEC or FINRA to consult with them and were talking to them about making themselves more friendly towards the industry, not necessarily with even new rules, but maybe the way they operate, maybe the attitude that they bring to the practice, what would you tell them? I don't know if that's a fair question or not, Amy, but whether you can answer that, whether you get yourself in hot water, but I'm curious what you would say to officials at FINRA and the SEC about maybe operating at a little different, maybe a little different attitude, a little different plane. What would you say to them?
Well, they have changed how they communicate with the industry. And I know that the past administration, or I should say the current administration, the Trump administration, has gotten a lot of criticism in so many ways, and rightly so. But the SEC's leadership did take a much more direct and transparent approach to communicating with the industry that was different from how the previous Democratic SEC took. So they were actually issuing those compliance, what they call risk alerts. They were issuing risk alerts for the industry. They were, you know, issuing guidance to the industry. They were speaking more openly about their plans on how they were going to conduct their examinations and what they were looking for and what their findings were that came out of the various targeted sweeps that they conducted. So they actually did quite a lot to give the industry an indication of their concerns and their, and even their questions on, how does the industry view a certain role. They were putting out requests for comments on their rule proposals. So they were taking a more transparent approach and trying to be more communicative with the industry. it will be interesting to see if they continue that approach. I think that was actually a good way to get feedback from the industry, because if you want to bring legislation from the 1940s up to speed to, you know, the 2022 and beyond, then you need to see what does the industry want and how do they currently operate? How do they foresee themselves operating in the future? How do they plan on using technology? Because, of course, that's becoming a huge part of firm functions and activities. So understanding that and knowing what the industry intends to do in the future is the best way to know how to update the rules.
So operating in the private sector as you do, what adjective would you ascribe to the general feeling out there? Is it anger? Is it frustration? Is it exasperation? How does the industry react to the regulatory experience that you're going through? Particularly, as I said earlier, I use the word opacity. It just seems that a lot of this stuff is not real clear, that you're kind of taking your chances if you step out. But what adjective would you say is kind of the overarching one that the industry is expressing?
So right now, I think there's apprehension. I think that's the best adjective that I can give you, because we're having a changing of the guard. So now we're into a Democratic administration. We're going to have a Democratic chairperson at the SEC, which is yet to be announced. But usually that means that the SEC is going to become more strict and take a stronger stance towards regulation and basically be tougher with firms. So if they go in, if they're conducting examinations and have findings, they're going to be much more prone to move forwards with an enforcement action, as opposed to discussing it and talking it out with the firm and reconciling the issue without enforcement.
Well, we will see if this rule will stand or will not stand, and whether the overall level of enforcement that takes place. It changes, as you've indicated, from one administration to another, particularly when it's a different party. Our guest has been Amy Lynch, former SEC and FINRA regulator, now running her own firm, Frontline Compliance, where she assists private companies with regulatory and compliance issues. Amy, thank you for the time. Obviously, there's still a lot of unanswered questions here, but this is the nature of the beast. We do appreciate you taking the time and walking us through it, though.
Thank you, Mike. It's been a pleasure being on your show today.